record mode. And so what this means is that everything that you say will be recorded, and then we're going to be posting this on our website, boardoptions.com. I would like to introduce our guest, Jeff Drettler. He is the author of the case that you looked at today. Jeff is a partner at Rubin & Rudman, which is a law firm in Boston. His area of expertise is labor and employment representing management. He was elected a fellow at the College of Labor and Employment Lawyers. He's been recognized as a Massachusetts super lawyer for employment litigation defense. He was appointed by Governor Baker to serve on the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination Advisory Board. Jeff has been active with the American Bar Association section of labor and employment law for more than a decade. He is the president of the Northeastern University School of Law Alumni Board of Directors. And so obviously a guy who knows what he's talking about. We are assuming for purposes of this discussion that the company is based in Massachusetts. So before we get into your conclusions and what you would do, let's first ask, does anybody have any questions for Attorney Drettler on Massachusetts law as it relates to this case? Anybody?
Well, I'll just say that I'd love any questions, but I think that the fact pattern could apply in almost any state. But that being said, happy to take any questions.
Oh, the fact pattern could apply anywhere in the world.
The law would be slightly different, maybe, but not hugely on these issues.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jeff, take it over. Why don't you just ask people what they think?
Okay. Well, I was privileged to be in one of the breakout groups, and we had a really great conversation. And looking at and I'll just say that this fact pattern is, an amalgamation of some real life events that you've probably read about in the news. I sort of took a few real events that have occurred and massage them a little bit and combine them, as well as some of my own cases. And this is a very, very typical kind of a situation that I deal with every day. And oftentimes, the question comes up, what is really the role of the board? And it depends, of course, on the size of the company, the kind of company, in a situation like this, where you've got the allegations here being made against the CEO, that sort of rises it right up to the level of the board. I mean, you have to get the board involved when the allegations are against the CEO. If these similar allegations had been made against a lower level employee, then probably not. But, one, you've got a lawsuit, and one, you've got a branding PR kind of issue that could turn into a lawsuit. And I guess the issue, as was brought up in my group, is, what's the immediate response and what's, sort of more long-term structural issues that need to be dealt with. And I guess I would invite somebody from one of the other groups I don't know who was in what group. So to sort of maybe is there a spokesperson from one of the groups that wants to share some of the thoughts that came out?
In order to make this breakout group number one was with Anthony, Barry, Anna, and George. How about you guys? Did any perspectives?
Sure, I can chat.
Go ahead.
Sure, Anna. Sure. Okay. So we had a great conversation. So I sort of came in at it at first thinking, why was Maria left as an HR person when the firm, took them over, right? So that to me was an open question. But overall, I think we had conversations around what are some of the things that they should have done that they can do now, which is like hiring a public relations person, hire a law firm to help do an audit. And these are things that George mentioned, hiring a diversity and inclusion person to help handle the Black Lives Matter situation that they have there in place. And then we had a really good conversation towards the end, and I'm sure George and Anthony can add more to it, but we had a really good conversation around, well, should we remove Seth and Maria, right? Because Seth as the CEO and Maria, because she was overseeing, and clearly things must have gotten out of hand. So is there a need to remove that? I had questioned whether we can remove Seth because it felt like he was the face of the company. But Anthony provided an awesome example where he says, yes, in a different situation, they have removed the person that was the CEO of a company in a similar situation. So that was just good for me to know. But that was the thing that I had questioned. Should Seth have been removed? Because to me, it felt like he was the face. You know?
If I could ask, Anna, would you consider removing Seth and or Anne Maria or maybe just Seth immediately or do an investigation and then decide? You know.
Well, definitely an investigation needs to be done. I mean, so it would have to, well, for me, I don't know. for me, it would be at least do an investigation because you got a lawsuit, but you need to question it. You need to audit. You need to bring in a third party person that does some interviews and really understands how much of this is actually real. Right.
Yeah. Let me chime in. We didn't really answer your exact question right away or immediately, but we did talk but we did talk about having a situation with a lot of conflicts of interest where the two principals that are involved in the allegations are married to each other, and they both have, you know, one's the CEO and one's the head of HR, and this is an HR problem or two problems. So I think you probably, as a board, you know, the board, the CEO serves at the pleasure of the board. So you probably, what I had said was, because he's sort of the face of the company and the sort of the menu brains, maybe he gets demoted to just doing the menu and the food procurement and stuff like that that talked about. We didn't really get into the public face too much, the charity things that he goes to and all that, but this seems like the type of situation where you have to bring in a new leader, a new boss who's going to say, we're going to straighten this place out. And then, you know, the head of HR being part of the problem here, and with the Black Lives Matter, it's probably not a company, and maybe even the private equity firm may not have a person who's an expert in diversity and inclusiveness. So there's maybe another consultant that you're going to have to bring in to help you manage this and figure out how do you go forward. So those were some of the things that we talked about.
Group two is Barr, Kevin, Supriya, and Velda. Any thoughts that you had?
Yes, we spoke about a number of different things. In terms of the CEO and Maria, I personally would opt to put them on administrative paid leave immediately, and the board then determine who will step up to fill the CEO's job until the investigation is over with. There's a conflict of interest with the HR person, the CEO, definitely, and an outside investigator should be brought in. And based on the recommendations of that investigation, then determine, you know, what are the next steps. I agree about the diversity and inclusion person, that they're definitely going to need a person at some point. They might be able to get a combination person who has the HR background as well as diversity background, if for some reason another that Maria was found in a negative light. But the other part is, without a doubt, the board should step up and find out if there are in fact policies that are in place and protocols, where the protocol should be an annual training program, or at least the, sending out policies to re-emphasize the actual values of the company, and to encourage the employees to come forward at any point in time when they have an issue like that. Now, granted, usually they come to HR, but as I train managers myself, I said, you know, they can also go call 1-800-MCAD. So you either have it, do something right or have a problem. And then also, we also talked about making a statement to the employees themselves at the juncture that these people would be removed for during the investigation, to say that we do not tolerate this. These are our policies. Therefore, X, Y, and Z. And I think that takes care of a number of things all at the same time.
I'm finding it seems like people are pretty quick to remove this CEO. That's, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and I find that, you know, based on allegations, that seems, it may be the ultimate, it may be the ultimate decision that's made. But, you know, as I look at this fact pattern, you know, it seems to me that that's a, even putting the CEO on paid administrative leave, and Velda, I of course agree with that, depending on the circumstances. If you've got a, as I mentioned in my smaller group, if you've got a supervisor who's harassing a subordinate or something, and then they still working together, and you know, you've got to remove that person from the situation immediately, then, I mean, you do that day. That don't come in tomorrow, we'll let you know when we're done investigating, we'll decide. But when you've got a claim here by a woman who is a former employee, and it's against the CEO, how do you put the CEO on paid administrative leave during the, it's kind of hard, and with the founder, I mean, it's a pretty big decision, just throwing that out there.
Let me ask if group three was Gay, Karen, Robin, and JDR. Who's JDR?
Oh, that's me.
Oh, okay, fine. Yeah. So you already just talked about your
Gay or somebody else from our group.
So we had a similar conversation, and I think that I was very loath to remove the CEO prior to getting the facts from an investigation, if there was a way to isolate them from, and then we had this conversation about the fact that the employee was no longer at the company. And that's not to take anything away from, you know, if the fact pattern is proven out, then yes, I think a lot of the things that have been talked about make sense. But I think first you get the investigation with the caveats that Jeff said, if you've got this subordinate relationship, but that's not what's going on here. And I think because, you know, I'm a venture investor, and young companies, to remove the CEO can be absolutely crippling to the company. And so I think you really want to know that you're dealing with verified facts before you take that kind of a step. On the other hand, you definitely want to put in place some much more of a professionalized HR function and governance. And I think, you know, Velda, what you were saying about, you know, bringing in the diversity expert, as well as constantly repeating these are our values. And I think your suggestion that the particularly as the fact pattern gets established, if it's actually true, then I think having the board say that to the employees is really important. And of course, at that point, if it was borne out, then you would take a lot of different actions. Mm-hmm. That was what I was, get the facts first, I think, is where I come from.
Going back to what Velda said about hiring, you know, hiring an investigator to come in and a more professional HR and possibly diversity person, I agree completely with that. And I think taking proactive steps to set the tone of the company, you know, in the long term, I mean, you got to deal with this lawsuit, of course, looking back at what already happened. But in terms of looking forward, you know, you need to not just protect the company from liability, but send a message to the employees of what's the culture here. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, in the wake now, or not in the wake, I mean, we're still in it, you know, this is the social justice being at the forefront. I mean, I've gotten calls from you know, clients wanting to know, saying that it's bubbling up from their employees, kind of like what's in here. You know, they're demanding, you know, forums to talk about these issues, a discussion group, a lunchtime meeting, readings to have, a place to express themselves, but not just to talk. They want to see action too. But, you know, there has to be proactive steps, not just a PR campaign, actual, a real, real stuff done, you know.
Breakout room 4 was Chris, Ingrid, Mark, and Marianne. How about you, you guys?
Yeah, I would say many of the things that were covered earlier definitely were talked about in our group. Mark, Chris, and Mary and I also added the sense of having some sort of cultural assessment done across the entire organization. I think that was an additional add, we would say. As it relates to the timing, I think some of us were more quick to say, you know, suspend, get them out of there. And then others were like, hey, let's wait. Let's make sure we're getting all the facts. I felt like our group was pretty balanced where we said, we also want to make sure that we're understanding there's a court of public opinion, that as much as you would like to kind of have the measured investigator, by the time you're even finding someone on speed dial to investigate, 20 tweets could have gone out. So you have to just be mindful that there's a public opinion piece and you're trying to save the brand, but you're also trying to drive and deliver, you know, a wholesome image for customers to want to keep coming back. But we also have to say we have a no nonsense toleration of bad behavior. We want to stick to our core values. So I think we had, I don't know, the rest of my team can certainly speak up. I think we had a really good, well-balanced approach in most of the things you guys have discussed. I think, Velda, you mentioned a couple things with the core values reiterating. I was like, oh, that would have been good. And a sexual harassment training to boot would have been really good. But those two things, I was like, wow, I work in HR. How did I not think of that? But I think the others we covered, I certainly invite the rest of the team to speak up if they think.
You did a great job of summarizing. I think the key with us was audits and assessments to ensure that we're making a measured decisions about the leadership team and about how we can improve the culture down the road. And but you're right, Ingrid, we were a little bit, I might have been one of those people to say, get out before this place burns. No, but I think that's a part of an assessment as well, right? Is how much damage are we looking at? So we had a good measured discussion, ultimately landed on this need to have multiple layers of auditing going on from HR to the legal aspects.
Yeah. And how much the board was accountable for in the very beginning when I think Anna said it, you know, once we had this blending of corporations, we should have been saying, hey, Maria needs to leave. That should have been, and then we just continued to let this go. And that was something that on, from a culpability standpoint, we would have to have been mindful for whether there's going to be an implication right or wrong about that later on. So that was something we did discuss at well at length. Mark, anything you want to add?
No, I think you did an excellent job. And I think one of the things we're looking at is it's a normal story where it was run as a small business. You have the wife doing the HR and the CEO, you know, the board, particularly the investors, didn't really put a platform in to get it to be a corporation. And that's problematic and needs to be addressed from both. We talked about bringing in people to help, you know, really not only just audit, but also do a professional HR and look at the other infrastructure things to make sure it's a platform for growth going forward that's professional and not just sort of a family run mom and pop type of business. The other thing is when you're talking about the CEO and suspending them or doing something along those ways, it was one person who made the allegation, obviously innocent until proven guilty, but it also said in the case that there was a number of other people that have come forward. And so now you have a number of people that you do need to research. And if it is that many people and this person is actively involved with employees on a day-to-day basis, mm-hmm. you know, what's to stop them from doing it to someone else? You want to just protect yourself as well, that you're not creating a problem that's going to fester more while you're doing your investigation. That's why we're like, well, if it's a lot of people, maybe we need from a liability standpoint, just to say, okay, you're not going into the stores and going to your employees for a little bit while we, you know, really determine if these allegations are accurate and true. That's where we came with the let's pay you to not come to work at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, somebody said, it might have been George, or I can't remember who it was, said you maybe demote the CEO to just reviewing the menus and stuff. And the other thing is promote the CEO to be like up and out of the day-to-day management. You know, let the CEO be the face, the brand, the celebrity chef, the designing the menu, and but not running the company, not managing employees, not being literally in the kitchen. And, you know, not to name names, but I mean, I'm not saying anything that wasn't in the Boston Globe recently. I mean, that just happened with a company, you know, Tate, you may have, is a popular restaurant. And there was, you know, there were allegations that the founder, you know, sort of the Black Lives Matter issue. I took that right out of the paper, and they didn't get rid of her. They made her like sort of the overarching, you know, person, but she's not running the day to day anymore. So that's sort of how they dealt with it. Of course, then you look at the Steve Wynn situation. And that was really, I mean, I think most of the people on the call are familiar with it, I know, because they're in the Boston area. But you know, the casino magnate, you know, the licensing board here in Massachusetts basically required that he be removed from his own company and his name taken off the casino, and required and in order to get the license, the Wynn company had to put in like, you know, all kinds of new policies and procedures and an independent and ways to make anonymous complaints and other reviews. They had to basically, you know, jump through a lot of hoops to make sure that this wasn't going to happen again.
Hey, Jeffrey, do senior executives at firms or board members, do they have like ethics clauses or special things that kind of insulate basically organization from bad behaving employees? I mean, I'm just curious.
You mean giving the company grounds to terminate? You mean?
Yeah, basically. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, certainly a lot of companies will have a code of conduct policy, and senior executives, including a CEO. I'm sure that in this case, if you know, this KLA, I think it's called, you know, bought out the company, and I'm sure the CEO's got, you know, an executive employment agreement that has termination for cause provisions. And that's, you know, I'm sure one of the termination for cause provisions is if you violate the company's code of conduct or subject the company to you know, public, you know, ridicule, that's not the right word, but, you know, and then you get into a fight, are we going to pay them? But that's the question. But the question is, do they even want to get rid of them or not? You know, and look at the CEO, McDonald's, you know, they got rid of him and paid him millions and millions and millions because he said, you know, it was just one time thing and it wasn't really that bad or something like that. And then they found out later that it was much worse. And now they're suing him out of a clawback provision in the severance agreement to get back all the stock and the money they paid him when he left. So,
and that one, that's a particularly interesting one because it's very timely, but also the HR department is implicated now because they're saying the HR department was not responding to complaints, that there were complaints. And so I think it's outside of the Black Lives Matter, which there were separately those allegations, I think, at McDonald's, but this particular one around, you know, not complying with company code of conduct. And we'll see what happens. I'm sure the board's going to be sued, but.
Do boards have the right to ask the HR departments for, you know, hey, can you show me any of your harassment information? Or, I don't know, I guess I'm just trying to say, how do boards get ahead of this type of thing?
Well, my experience, and please anybody else answer, but in my experience, you know, boards receive periodically, you know, whether it's every quarter or some period of time, you know, a list of some kind of summarization of the complaints that have been made to the whistleblower hotline and the dispensation or the disposition, I should say, not dispensation, disposition of them, how, whether they were investigated, whether they went to an external investigator, whether they, because there's a lot of claims. It's not just it's not just sexual harassment or these kinds of things. It can be, I mean, it's all manner of things, right?
So safety, anything. Okay.
Safety, yeah. My supervisor doesn't like me, you know.
That was my experience too, because I would put together those reports, Ingrid. But I will say that most of the time they were sort of in a summary format, and only if we thought that it was going to rise to be an individual big legal matter with a large price tag associated with it, would we break it out separately for the board's attention. Mm-hmm. You know, which sort of gets to the question, does management have the ability to kind of hide stuff from the board by, you know, not disclosing really the severity or the concern? I have to say that I came down on the side of actually suspending the CEO. I felt that the company should have a code of conduct. I guess we could assume they did have a code of conduct, and that evidencing that it applied to everyone, even the CEO, because the company felt that this was a serious matter, would in the long run probably go a long way to helping rehabilitate their public image, because there was such a large amount of comments on social media. I felt that the company would be able to say, we took this extremely seriously. The CEO has been put on administrative leave while it's being investigated, so that they had a story to tell. That was my view.
I've sat on a couple different boards, and as part of that, made sure that we reviewed policies each year to make sure that they, A, were up to date, and that they were not going to have a revenue impact if something went wrong. And then also have the HR person come to one of the board meetings and talk about what are some of the outlying issues that we need to be thinking about. Is there anything the board can help with? You know, should we develop a new policy because X? If you're on top of those kinds of things, hopefully those kinds of things aren't going to be happening.
That's probably part of the issue, right? Because the fact that Maria isn't an HR person, she mm-hmm. wouldn't have known to have followed through and done all of those steps. But I would have hoped that the board, having done this before, and so they know what they should be seeing, that they would have requested that from her, yep. Right?
Yep. You don't want your company to further criticize, because let's say that something else happened while these two matters were being investigated that, you know, implicated the CEO or his wife again, then to have the news in the public that the board didn't, you know, remove him and that this behavior continued, then you're criticized again. So I sort of felt like it was a nip it in the bud kind of issue. Wait for the results of the investigation. And if everything came out fine, great. The CEO went back to his job and doing, you know, all the great work to help grow the company. And if the results of the investigation turned out to be negative, well, the board acted swiftly, responsibly, and that's the message going forward.
Barr had something to comment.
Oh, right. Well, it was really getting to what Jeff was saying about McDonald's. It just seems to me from reading the paper that the board should have done a whole lot more work before they gave him his settlement payment, that I did not understand why the board, we can't assume that they knew stuff or they would have made those payments, but it's a little bit late in the game. It was so much information as fact. So it's rather shocking, big company, highly public board. And I think that in our group, we talked about the board's responsibilities to make sure, and as Velda described, that you would do audits of the internal policies. But in particular, since you brought up McDonald's case, I just think that's so surprising.
It's pretty stunning, I think. I think it's stunning.
Totally. I mean, yeah, huge company. Yeah. Anyway, I wonder if you had any comments on that, Jeff, because you brought that up.
Oh, I only know what I read in the paper. I'm not involved in the case, but I think that sometimes they, they don't want to get into a litigation battle with the CEO about, you know, whether they're going to, you know, strip him of all his severance pay, and because that can blow up too. So they probably just said, we'll just pay him, he'll go away, and that'll be that. But then when the public outcry occurred, they realized they had to do something. That's
probably we've not heard from the last group, which is Craig, Mindy, and Robert.
So this is Craig, and my battery's running out, so you may hear part of me. This reminds me, Larry, of taking over a small public company in Miami, which is a very multicultural area. And it was had to bring in an outside attorney because this is my second day, determined that we had a hostile sexual environment. So we had to bring in the right people, brought in an outside firm who had a specialist in this area. She trained us all. We went through, we signed statements that said we had been trained and that if something we were harassed in the future, they would those people would go directly to the HR person. So it couldn't be suppressed or it couldn't smolder underneath. So that's part of the process that goes on on the sexual harassment side. So I just wanted to bring that out and by the way, I was like a cat on a hot tin roof until I could get all that training done because I didn't want messages on the internet about us not doing anything. I agree with, was it Velda that was talking about bringing in a PR firm early on while you're getting the legal side ramped up. Mindy or Bob, did you want to comment?
Robert?
He's on mute.
Yeah,
you guys are on mute.
I think I'm off mute now, I hope.
Yeah.
My worry, there were a couple of worries. We're KLA, we're the investors, and we actually put a lot of our own people in executive roles. So it felt to me like we really took our eye off the ball. Either that or this is an errant problem that is sour grapes, could be, couldn't be. The broader issue around this that strikes me is if a CEO is creating problems for an organization, a la Travis Kalanick with Uber, and they had to ultimately remove him, and he was considered we built a toxic environment, but it came out late, if you will, after they had grown quite a bit. My concern about this company or any other company is if we've created a toxic environment around harassment and other problems that we've kept under wraps, and my wife runs HR, so that makes it even easier for me. And not only should an investigation take place around my behavior, if you will, if I'm the CEO, but I think that we as investors, now putting on the investor hat, need to look long and hard at what's the situation with this business, and if we are having problems that are now have to come to light broadly, what are we going to do about changing them? And it's more than just hiring a specialist to do a review or hiring a D&I specialist or whatever. We may have to do an awful lot of work, or our investment, which we're on the hook for, could really turn south on us, because at some point we're going to want to exit this business, and I'm assuming with the money we've dumped into it, we want to take out way more. So we may uncover a lot of stuff beyond just this allegation against the CEO. And I also think, and Mindy brought this up, if we're going to do something around D&I, which I think we should, diversity and inclusion, we have to have a very serious plan, and it's going to take us a while to get there. And it's more than just hiring somebody to figure it out for us. We're going to have to, as an executive team and a board, really do something, because I think a lot of companies are saying, oh, we have diverse workforce, and they're kind of window dressing, and our employees aren't going to let us get away with it. Mm-hmm. And us, the public, isn't going to get away with it because they're our customers across our 15 restaurants, and we want more. So, Mindy, did you want to comment further?
We talked about whether this guy Seth should be moved over as to the executive chef if his creativity and his whatever are really important to the brand, and whether that makes sense. And I think the other part was that the wife really has to get out of the HR job, that she just doesn't belong there, because they need competent people who understand how to handle HR matters, especially in this time where that's an important consideration when people join companies. Is there diversity, and are they, do they have plans, as we talked about, and how are they moving forward? So those were just some of the things. But I think one of the things that we said is it seems like these investors took their eye off the ball. They relied on the fact that this guy had been successful, and they grew and grew. And we've seen that when these companies grow and they scale, and then they don't have the right people to take mm-hmm. it.
When I was talking for our group about hiring an investigator, I had an experience in a situation not exactly like this, but where one of my clients, when I was with Ernst & Young as an audit partner, we had to tell the board to hire an investigator to solve a problem. Karen's laughing because she may have heard about this. She wasn't involved in helping me at the time, but one of her counterparts was. But we made sure in that case that it was a problem with the general counsel. So it wasn't the CEO, but the lawyer had, was the bad guy, sort of the rotten apple. And we were advising the board as auditors, and we said, you need to make sure this investigator reports to you. And it was a fraud. So we made sure that they report to us, but we were involved in the structuring the investigation so that they knew what we as the auditors were looking for. So I think you need to really craft these things in the right way so that the board is in charge and protected. And then the board needs it sometimes to sort of step back and let people do their thing. I mean, we're not management, but in a case like this, you've really got to manage the situation and make sure the right experts get pulled in. And at the end of that situation, this one that I was involved with, we ended up telling the board we wouldn't continue as their auditors unless they hired new legal counsel, because we lost trust in the guy, and they did. So we stayed.
I have a couple quick things if I could mention. Another sort of real life fact pattern that I drew on a little bit that was in the news not so recently, but is that the chef Todd English, some of you might know, Olives, and he's got all these famous restaurants, and he's got them in Vegas and all. And, how do you remove Todd English from the empire? It's not really the same without him. It's not just any old steak place, it becomes harder. And in this case, Maria is sort of low-hanging fruit because everybody sees the conflict of having sort of a self-made HR person that's the wife of the CEO and that she's not up to par. But even if you have a professional HR, experienced HR person, if you've got a rogue CEO, they can't stop them.
Anthony, and then Jeff, I want you to have the last word before we stop. Anthony?
Oh, thank you. The question I had for you, JDR, is there an obligation on behalf of management to inform the board of all sexual harassment claims? The reason I ask is there was the situation with the Fenway Community Health Center with sexual harassment by one of the physicians.
Right.
And apparently there had been several incidents that had been settled out of court where the CEO did not advise the board of these previous, and only when the current one came out, the board had to deal with it, and both the CEO and the physician had to be removed. But is there a responsibility, is my question.
I'll take that question and other people can chime in if they know. There's no statutory or common law obligation that I'm aware of. I think if the board tells the CEO, this is what we expect of you, then there's an obligation. But other than that, no, I think the CEO has to use his or her judgment as to what rises to the level of the board's attention. Like Robin, I think, was saying, if you have, depends on the size of the company, lower level, it depends on the situation.
I would say that in my experience, it would really depend too on the size of those settlements, right? I mean, oftentimes in private companies, there's a restriction on how much money a CEO can authorize to spend without taking it to the board.
But I think there's also a duty that you have to tell the board to keep them informed of what's going on, you know, just in terms of doing business and also in terms of the responsibility that they have in managing money, et cetera. You know, there's just a lot. I mean, that was, I remember that case that you're talking about, Anthony, in terms of the doctor. But, you know, if the board's not involved and the board's not made aware of things, there are other problems going on in the business, in the relationship with the CEO.
Yeah, no, that's true.
I'll just quickly toss in one comment. You know, there's like a canary in the coal mine sometimes on these kinds of situations. And it's the results of the employee surveys or employee satisfaction surveys. Because if you start to see data, because, you know, most boards will see that and they survey every year or every other year and they have pulse surveys. But if you start to see comments about harassment, it doesn't have to be sexual harassment, it could be bullying, could be verbal harassment. You know, you need to ask more questions as a board member. That's my take.
Yeah.
Jeff, let me give you the last word.
Okay, I'll on the last word, I will say, if you're worried about your own personal liability as a board of director for these kind of things, my experience is that, you know, you're not going to be personally liable for aiding and abetting sexual harassment or discrimination, you know, as a board member, unless you're personally involved in the situation. Just the fact that you're on the board doesn't make you liable under those statutes. However, there has been more and more shareholder derivative suits being filed to say that the board was asleep at the wheel and the company lost value and they therefore breached their fiduciary duty. So the liability wouldn't be for the sexual harassment or the discrimination, but for failing to manage the ship.
I want to thank you very much, Jeff, for your comments. I want to thank the participants for their lively discussion. In about 2 weeks, this program will be on boardoptions.com. The particular area is going to be From Ideas to Action, and you can listen to it. And next month, we will have another Seat at the Table program. We'll have another case. This time, it's going to be a case about if you're on a board of directors of a technology company, and the CEO assures you that we are on the cutting edge and that we're innovative, how do you know? What questions should you be asking to identify, are we really innovative or are we just getting fed a bunch of stuff from the CEO? So that'll be next month. Look forward to seeing you there. Best wishes for the weekend.
Thank you. Take all.
Care. Take
Thanks,
care.
Everybody.
Thank you, Larry.
Everybody stay well.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye, everybody.